If you read the email that I sent out earlier this week or received the letter through the post, then you might have picked up that we're starting a new sermon series, kind of starting it properly next week, looking at different aspects of praying, how to pray, different ways of praying, learning from kind of other people and other traditions, and exploring that together. So we're going to be using a book called Original Prayer, which I recommended in the email and the letter, and Simon's holding up to wave before you at the moment. I would hold my version up, but it's on Kindle, so it won't work quite as effectively as a paper version like that. So I would encourage you to invest in that book if you're able to between now and next Sunday. I think it's £6.66, I think mine cost me, on Kindle, or it's about £10, I think, if you buy a printed version. By way of introduction to that, though, today Simon and I are going to try and have a conversation. We haven't rehearsed this particularly, so we'll see how it goes, but we wanted to just kind of have a warm-up to this idea of prayer by talking a little bit about our own recent experiences in prayer, and that might help you to think about where you're at too, and you might resonate with some things, and some things might be new and different to you, and that's part of the process, really. And our readings this morning, I think, lead into quite well some of the stuff that Simon and I want to kind of share as we talk this morning. The psalm talks about being still and knowing that God is God. And then the second reading talks about knowing ourselves as, well, not, it wasn't about us, but we can apply it to ourselves, knowing ourselves as loved by God and God delighting in us. So perhaps I'll start by asking Simon to share something. I know, Simon, you and the St. Thomas' community have been learning a bit about kind of befriending silence and learning to pray in silence and the value of silence. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, thanks. As other people know, at St. Thomas' community, about a year ago, we decided that our Tuesday night small group that we used to meet as a small group, because we're Bible study group, we changed that to a regular weekly prayer meeting. In fact, in the end, we ended up having two, one on Tuesday morning, one on a Thursday morning. And we wanted to focus ourselves more on prayer as a community, praying into our life together and for one another. And that was before lockdown. And then obviously lockdown happened and all the stresses and strains of this year came on board. And one of the things that we've just been learning together and as we've been sort of praying together is learning to value less talking and more silence, more time just spent in God's presence, just dwelling in his presence rather than coming into his presence with a shopping list. And I think the more that we've actually got into the pressures of lockdown and then the pressure from outside, you'd have thought that help, God. Actually, I think we've discovered more and more that actually sometimes it's helpful just to have that time just to be. And so we've been leading to quite extensive periods of silence, sometimes with some images, sometimes with a gentle music or something in the background, having introduced the prayer session that we spend together. But on Zoom, we've been exploring quite a lot of that. And I think for me that it was quite scary at first. It wasn't easy. I think the world around us is noisy. And as soon as we sort of go into a time of quiet or silence, I don't know about you, but as soon as I sort of try and be quiet and try and be quiet from the world, it goes mad in here. And everything in here goes crazy. And I start trying to get everything in the world into gear. And I try and sort out everything in my head. So it might be being silenced, but actually my head is far from silent. And that's because we're not used to it. We're not used to what it's about. And we have to sort of almost sort of train ourselves to rest, to train ourselves to discover what that actually means. And I think one of the things that we've been learning over the last few months in St. Thomas is really that sense of really slowing down, trying to put the silence before the noise. And invested really heavily during lockdown in our relationship with God and our relationship with one another, before that sense of getting out and doing something, which people might think, you know, St. Thomas is all about going out and doing mission. But actually, we've been spending a lot of time just spending time with one another, but particularly time in God's presence and learning to come before him and What's emerged from that, I think, it really is that we've began to reduce some of our fear about some of the what's going on around us. We've seen a bit of hope begin to rise when actually we're probably quite cynical about what's going on. And I think our services and our parameters have become more and more simple and less stressful. Focus on we've got to get things done, or we've got to pray, we've got to get this prayer point in. It's become a lot more simple and a lot more spending just time being. So I think that's probably been our journey. What's your experience been, Andy? What's been your sort of, you've been through a bit of a journey yourself, experiencing different experience of prayers?
I think a big shift that's happened in the last few years in my prayer life has been, perhaps subconsciously or unconsciously, kind of started off from a place of assuming that I've got to somehow establish a connection with God, and kind of suddenly I needed to find a way of hearing God more. But I found myself getting to a point where my prayer life is less about trying to do stuff in order to connect with God. So reading the Bible and praying for people and using the liturgy and drawing on devotional resources. I mean, I do all of those things still, but I think what has changed for me is that it's coming from a different place now. And it used to be about prayer. I suppose to me felt like it's something that I do. I need to pray. I need to read my Bible. I need to do everything I can to connect with God. Whereas I think now the emphasis has changed, and it feels to me now as more that I seek to just to be, as you've just been saying, Simon, and not strive to make it work, and not strive to try and connect with God, but simply to be, to be still. I go through exactly the same as you talked about in terms of as soon as I'm still, I remember all the things I need to worry about or remember to do or people I need to contact or whatever. And my way of coping with that is just to jot them down on a scrap of paper or something next to me so I know so I don't need to worry about things that I won't forget. And actually, it can take quite a long time to get to the point where I'm still. That varies from day to day. The more I kind of create that space each day, the less time it takes me to be still on subsequent days, if that makes sense. The more that my days have been busy and I haven't created that space and that time to be still, the longer it takes for me to get still again. So trying to get back into a prayer rhythm this week, having kind of got out of sort of my rhythms over Christmas and New Year, was harder. Harder to get back to that place of stillness. But once I get to that place of stillness, that's the place where I encounter God and encounter some sense of oneness with God, connection with God, union with God, experience relationship with God as a loving connection and union and relationship. And at that point, all the kind of discipline of trying to be still becomes so worthwhile because then that's a place of communion with God and communing with God. So that's kind of, I guess it's been a shifted emphasis for me mainly in the last few years from striving to try and do it myself to simply being and allowing God. And I suppose I'm an activist by nature, so I feel as though I should be achieving things and ticking things off and accomplishing things. And it's really very hard for me just to sit still because it can feel like a waste of time. But actually, it isn't a waste of time. And once I've done it for a while, I realise that actually the rest of my time that day tends to be much more productive and much more fruitful and much more worthwhile because I've started or spent that time in stillness first. Simon, something that's been perhaps a bit different between you and I in our journeys over the last few years has been that I think I've tended to, my prayer life has tended to retreat into solitude more, whereas you've made much more of an effort to try and engage as a community in prayer. And I was particularly struck by something you were talking about in terms of embodied kind of prayer life. So it's not kind of a spirituality that kind of floats off into some kind of ethereal kind of place, but actually is embodied in life and relationship and work. I wondered if you'd like to say a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think one of the other things we've just been learning really is that prayer isn't just about hands together, eyes closed. That prayer is, in some ways, is the Bible says pray without ceasing. How the heck can you pray without ceasing when you're meant to be doing work or going out to look after the grandchildren or try and look after the kids or try and do your work? How the heck can you pray without ceasing? But that sense of somehow that your life as a whole becomes a reflection of that prayer, and that you live a life that is dependent on God. But also that links us with one another. And one thing that we've been learning quite a lot at St. Tom's, which I think some of the other guys have been beginning to develop at St. Augustine's here as well, is a bit of a triangle. I'm looking at the triangles on the wall behind Kaya, and it sort of struck me, reminded me that this triangle, which we've focused a lot on, which is if we get our relationship with God right, that's the top of the triangle. Then there's a relationship with one another in the community, the few people we pray together with, and that's the sort of bottom right-hand corner. And then there's the relationship with the people that we encounter in the world. And if you spend all your time trying to focus on just God and your community and the people around you, it all gets a bit lopsided and falls over. And if you spend all your time praying for God and the world and all the relationship with the world, it just goes a bit too, you don't get any connection, it all falls over. If you spend all your time just, you know, working it out what it means to be, have fun together and go out into the world, what it, you don't really go anywhere. But triangles are really strong if you put a strong triangle together as a threesome. And so if you can try and think about that relationship between our relationship with God, our relationship with one another, and our relationship with the world. And I guess that's probably similar to our motto that we have as a parish, that we're a loving community following Jesus, serving Normanton. That there's that sense that we are a free-folded promise that we make as a parish. And I think that's coming out in the way that we try and work with one another and cheer one another along in our prayer life. And we encourage one another in our prayer life daily. We send each other emails and saying, you know, here's something we want to pray about. We've got a WhatsApp group that we share prayer requests across. We have that sense of trying to encourage one another in our prayer connections. When compline was done each evening, it was a way that just before we went to bed at night that we were able to touch base together and just pray together. And it wasn't about a pressure. It wasn't like, you shall do this and you shall do that. It's more about trying to help one another along that journey, about trying to establish some sense of routine. And I think last week, well, some of you were on Zoom and heard me launch, and some of you were down at St. Thomas in person, heard me launch this thing called the Epiphany Project that we're going to be doing over the next few years, hopefully, at St. Thomas, which is really a move-on accommodation for homeless people out of hostels into everyday life. And part of the thing that struck me as I've been researching and exploring this whole journey that people need to make out of institutional care into living in the community is about forming rhythms in their lives, forming structure in one's life that is supportive to enable you to not feel like everything's all over the place. So if you've gone from institutional setting where everything's done for you, you have to get up at this time and you have to do this and you have to do that, to then living on your own, suddenly it's all the structure and organisation just goes out the window. And for us, that's been a bit like that with lockdown, that we were clear in what our structure was. We did know exactly what we were expected to do. We know where we're meant to be. And suddenly with lockdown, suddenly we've got, what do we do now? Where do we go? How do we put some sort of structure in our lives? And I think one of the things that we've learned is that some of these spiritual practices, some of this time encouraging one another and supporting one another in that spiritual practice, is forming something in us and changing the way that we look at God, the way we look at one another, almost in sort of, yeah, if you're going to help some homeless guys to try and make that adjustment, you've got to make that adjustment yourselves first. You've got to learn what it is to find some sort of structure, some sort of support in your life, some sort of rhythm of life, of prayer in your life. And so we found that through mutually working together. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. But,
I just want to ask you a bit about this inner journey you've been on as well, which I think there's something between both of us. We've been reading a lot of this Richard Rohr guy. He's been stroking us, both of us, I think, in the last few months. I've got his book on my bedside. I'm reading him at the moment. But he talked a lot about this inner transformation, the inner transformation of ourselves and changing ourselves in the journey. Perhaps you can explain it a bit better now, and then perhaps I can chip in again afterwards.
I don't know whether I can explain it better or not, but it's something I'm trying to get my head around. I think over the years, one of my frustrations has been, why don't I see more transformation, more of the evidence of God's kingdom coming, more of the evidence of God at work in life, and that kind of yearning and frustration kind of all mixed in together. And yes, I've found that actually, again, this when I stop trying to do it myself and when I can be still and sit, allow God to work, then actually that is what starts to happen. But the transformation, I think a lot of my prayer has shifted from praying for transformation in other people, you know, change them and make life better by them changing, or circumstances, praying for the world. I still do those things. It's still good to pray for other people and situations in the world. But actually, I think that the emphasis again has shifted in my prayer life to recognizing that actually primarily prayer is about me communing with God and knowing myself loved by God and relating to Him. And actually, transformation happens through that. And the transformation happens within me, which then, of course, flows out to other people. But the importance of that transformation. And I was struck by Richard Rohr talking about, I don't know whether you're familiar with, kind of over the centuries, different kind of spiritual gurus have talked about the false self or the shadow self, recognizing that kind of our egos creates their own kind of idealized self-image and structure. And of course, part of the process, and that's not all part of human development and psychology and things, but actually, the importance of us growing as humans is that we grow beyond, our initial kind of ego structure, our sense of who we are and our idealized self, which of course isn't real, and that we let go of sort of that in order to make way for us to discover our true self and our real self, the one that's created in God's image and the one that knows its identity and its security in God. And I was very struck by something that Richard Rohr talked about. He talked about false self and shadow self. He talked about separate self. And that really struck me because it resonated with this sense of having discovered a sense of union with God. Actually, he talks about sin being the state of separateness, of disunion or of resistance to God. So rather than sin being defined by particular acts or things that we do that are wrong, being defined by the state of separateness and disunion with God and resistance to God. And of course, then the idea of being still in God's presence starts to make sense, because then we're actually, through contemplation, we're actually starting to experience the reality of that union with God, that living union with God. And for me, that feels as though it's kind of enabling an integration to happen, which feels very wholesome. So I think perhaps a more immature way of us dealing with things that we don't like about ourselves is that we project them onto other people, or we just pretend they're not there. And that way we tend to live in a lot of kind of fear of being found out, or a kind of mismatch between what other people perceive about us and what we perceive about ourselves, or all those kind of fracturing kind of dynamics in our lives. Whereas actually, I think my more recent experience has been that being in a place of contemplation and stillness with God causes me to, I don't know whether embrace is the right word, but recognize and acknowledge, and yes, I think embrace, the fact that actually there are aspects of my personality and my character that I don't like, and that are pretty ugly if you bring them out into the light. Instead of trying to suppress those or hide those or pretend they don't exist or project them onto other people and blame them rather than take responsibility myself, something of my process has been about just living with that and saying, okay, this is part of me. This is part of my humanity. This is part of who I am. And I have to own that, and I have to take responsibility for that, and I have to not deny that, but instead recognize it and accept it. And I've found that there's something very integrating and wholesome and freeing about that. So rather than it being something threatening, which I think is the initial kind of experience of that kind of thinking, it has become something quite liberating, because I don't have to hide in the same way then. I can just say, well, okay, this is me, and this is the way I am, and it's not perfect, but then none of us are perfect. But actually, in God's presence, knowing myself held by Him and loved by Him, then actually those things cease to... They're a threat to my false ego. They're a threat to the idealized self-image I might have of myself, because, of course, the reality is that's not true anyway. But if I can embrace the whole of who I am and the reality of who I am, then actually there's nothing to fear anymore, because that's the way it is. And I can experience God's healing and God's wholeness for the real me rather than the one that I would like ideally to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And I think one of the things that struck me as I've been reading about this over the last year or so, I'm reflecting on this journey, is it's that sense of our own identity. It gets so confused into these things. I've been really sort of struggling with that whole issue and questioning about that over the last, I don't know, probably a couple of years or so now. And that we have this sense that we're scared someone's going to find out who we really are, and they're not going to really like us if they find out who we really are. And that we therefore put this cover over ourselves, and we try and project this person who we are. And we're scared of that somehow we're going to fail. I know I've been really anxious about that, or that I'm not going to be in control of what's going on. And I think, again, for me, the whole lockdown process just knocked out all the sense of what we could try and achieve. We were suddenly left with that sense of flailing of what we could do. Or we could throw ourselves completely into going mad and being the hero who could save the world. And we could run around trying to solve everybody's problems, but actually still couldn't actually do anything. And that sense of what we needed to do was just that sense of slowing down and discovering who we actually we are. The joys of taking us down a monastic route with St. Thomas's is that we've had people who've been able to help us along that journey. And there's a chap called Ian Mosby, who's my guardian, our guardian as St. Thomas's community. Those of you who came to our profession last year, he preached at our service. And I meet with him once a month. We have a conversation. I'm meeting him tomorrow, to reflect together on our spiritual journey, the posh name for that, spiritual direction. But it's somebody else outside of us who can provide a bit of just a prompt just to say, oi, where are you going with this? How is that getting on? And Ian speaks a lot about Rory. He speaks a lot about him. He says that the false self confuses identity with function. We think we are what we do. Driven by the false self, our life is haunted with fear. Peace of losers, we continue to be vigilant against failure or being found out. Rowing through that fear is a shame. But when we come home to the love of God, everything changes. And it begins with how we learn to pray. And so I think for as we reflect over the next few weeks about prayer, I think the prayer should be less about, as I say, hands together, eyes closed, and more about actually our relationship with God and what our relationship with God is like. It reveals a bit more of who we are and what we're about, and a bit more about what we actually do. I'm sure we'll come on to a bit more of that in practice. I'm just aware of time, Andy. I just wondered whether we could move on to think about some practical outworking of that. How does that sort of work practically for you? How does it look for you in sort of practice?
You mean in terms of how I actually try and pray? Oh, is that what you... Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
I say this, but I feel a fraud saying it, because I fail as often as I succeed. But I try and give between 30 minutes and 60 minutes in the morning, first thing, to time spent in contemplation and prayer. So I try and get up early before Leon's up and try and do that. And also my resources these days are on my iPad, which is great in terms of the access it gives me to liturgy and to thoughts, you know, other people's reflections and thoughts on the readings and things and scripture. The trouble is, Facebook's also on my iPad, and my emails and my messages are also on my iPad, so I can get very distracted very easily and very quickly. And if I'm not careful, I've kind of read a couple of Guardian articles on Facebook before I actually get around to praying and things like that. But actually, I guess that's the battle for us each day, isn't it? It's to carve out that time and make it the priority. And when I do make it the priority, oh my word, what a difference it makes. And yet somehow I don't seem to learn from that day on day and keep getting back to the same place. One of my New Year's resolutions this year, which so far I've failed 100% of the time, but there haven't been too many Monday mornings yet, is on a Monday morning to give 2 or 3 hours to prayer and contemplation before I start doing everything else in my work week. Pray for me as I try and achieve that for the first time tomorrow in this new year. But just what I want to do is be able to live out of and work out of that place of loving union with God. And I need to be able to connect with that and create the space for that. And so that I'm allowing God to transform me in a way that then enables me to live the life that God has called me to live. Simon, anything else that you want to chip in at this stage before I just open it up to anybody else to chip in, and then we'll hand back to Kayo?
Yeah, I think first thing I want to bring up is the link between prayer and action. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for me. Something, again, I think I've learned over the last few years as we've been on the journey, particularly at St. Tom's. Tom's has taught me so much over the last few years. We started the journey at St. Tom's with a prayer meeting. And we had the best part of a year doing absolutely nothing but a weekly prayer meeting with three, four of us, Beth Hawkins, Elizabeth, myself, Patrick, when he was with us, and his wife Ruth. We just sat and we prayed each week in St. Tom's and just said, we don't know what we're doing. We haven't got a clue what we're doing, but we're just going to pray in the freezing cold. But then we began to act and do some things, but then God drew us back into prayer and to praying about, well, what do we do next and where do we go next? And do we form this thing called St. Thomas's Community? So we started doing some stuff and getting involved in doing some stuff in the community. Then God drew us back into a place of prayer again. And so we started praying and working through what that meant. And then we stayed the second stage of work at St. Tom's. And everyone thought, great, you're going to open up and you're going to do some great things. And we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And then we had lockdown and God drew us back into prayer again. And I think there's something around the fact that there's this cycle of prayer and action, prayer and action, prayer and action, that we can't separate out the place of prayer from the place of activity, that actually if you do too much praying you end up just not doing anything at all, but if you do too much action you don't end up doing anything at all either. That there has to be that both a combination of both prayer and action. The two things have to come together, and I think that's part of the DNA of what we are as a monastic community. I believe that's how the monks worked. I think people know I'm inspired heavily by St. Aidan. He spent his time on his island praying, the holy island of Lindisfarne. And then when the tide went out, he went out and walked about and did his mission stuff. But then he had to go back to his island before the tide came in. And when the tide was in, he went back to his time of prayer and back to his praying together. Anyone who's seen me preach with my white stole on will know I've got Aidan on my stole. And that's remind me of that in and out nature of the prayer. And I think really that is the sense of what's behind our monastic thinking, the Society of Holy Trinity stuff that we're doing down at St. Tom's, some of you might have heard about, is that prayerful action is essential to those activists who don't just act that strongly held conviction, but God is the source of their action. That's again my spiritual director Ian Mosby telling us that's the way we need to work. We need to focus ourselves not just acting out of our own convictions, but out of that place of God being the source of our action and activity. And that's really shaping some of the ideas that are emerging around the Epiphany Project, which again I talked about last week, that we wanted to make sure that there was a prayerful heartbeat right in the heart of the building. And part of the project is part of it is about having these regular rhythms of prayer each day within the building, which again I suppose is a bit like a monastery in that sense of prayer focus. So yeah, I think I'd say, I just wanted to make sure that link between the prayer and the action is quite important.
Absolutely, and I think that's a good reminder to us all, actually. I think there has been a strand of Christian thinking around which has put the emphasis on salvation all being about getting to heaven. So the danger there is that we just stay as we are and make no difference in this world because we're just waiting to get to heaven where everything will be perfect. And actually, I think there's been a kind of renewal in Christian thinking and theology recently that has been very helpful, which reminds us that actually Jesus taught us to pray and to work for God's kingdom to come on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, for heaven to come to earth, heaven being, of course, God's full presence and kingdom where God rules and reigns. So actually, that's probably a good point to stop, isn't it? That actually contemplation and prayer should lead us into playing our part in seeing God's kingdom come on earth. It shouldn't be about escaping the world and waiting for everything to happen at the end of time. Wonderful. We'll stop there. Just a quick opportunity, if anybody wanted to chip in or ask anything of Sam or I, or share something from their own experience that resonated, quick chance to do that now. Just wave at me if you'd like to do that. We could also do this again a bit later on at the end of the service if people just want to mull for a bit and then say something. But anybody want to just jump in now while you've got something fresh in your mind? No, nothing burning at the moment. So, I hope that's been helpful, having that bit of a conversation. Let's hand back to Kaio.